You're listening to the Slavic Literature Pod, your shelf help guide to all things Slavic. I'm Cameron Lalana.
And I'm Matt Garasimovich.
And today we're covering part two, chapter 32 of Vasily Grossman's Life and Fate and Breaking News. As we are speaking to you right now, people are in the Discord having conversations about this chapter. So we're going to have probably be reading and finding. Well, at least you're responding. I'm going to be finding out what people are saying as this episode goes. But the short version is when we last left Battlefront Stalingrad, things are not going good for the Red Army. In fact, things are still not going well for the Red Army in Stalingrad itself. The few survivors at this point are holding on and holding off the German advance. And all the meanwhile, many other forces are going to the north and south, getting ready to do a pincer maneuver on Paulus's armies, which the Germans, as it is noted, could very easily guess. It's not exactly subtle. It's rather sort of arrogance among their officer class who assume that, of course, they must be reinforcing the soldiers in Stalingrad. Surely we're not being held off by a ragtag force of barely alive soldiers at this point in time, which is setting them up for a great fall. Spoiler alert for the rest of the war.
Yeah, but if you didn't know how World War II ended.
Oh, if you didn't know how it ended and you've made it this far in this series, I'm honestly super impressed.
Congratulations.
Reach out. I want to interview you.
Yes.
Yeah. But at the same time, not all fun and games on the Soviet side. And I think as I'm glancing down at my phone, the sense I'm getting, that is the discussion that people are having about it. So is there anywhere that you would like to begin with this?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I wouldn't describe any of it as fun or games. But
Well, it was for Paulus for a while.
Yeah, no, that's true. We talked about this a little bit when we were doing our long episode on why it was that the Germans were surprised. And there was an essay that I had cited at one point in that, I think it was in that very first episode that you can go and find on the longer of our episodes. It's in this collection, Vasily Grossman, A Writer at War. My voice sounds different because I'm looking back at my bookshelf right now to make sure I have the title right. I think that's right.
It's
in there, and it kind of details in a little bit more explanation and rigor on how this was able to happen, but just basically the fact that wouldn't you know it, the Soviets did in fact know the geography of their own city and did in fact position certain troops in very strategic locations to the point where the Germans were basically like stormtrooper level running down the streets, getting mowed down, like, you know, into like they were being like funneled into very particular spots of the city. And this was able to hold them off for a while and to a point, obviously. And so it does sort of beg the question, right, though, how were they taken by surprise, and what was the failure, right, that they had so much momentum going in their way that they were able to be stopped, and how were they taken by surprise? And this is kind of what the book is positing. So I think that's an interesting interesting historical fact on that. Any World War II buffs, chime off in the chat, please.
Yeah, I don't know if that's established record, but I recall the I think it's the in John and Carol Gerard's biography of Vasily Grossman, one of the more definitive editions of the very few that have been written about Grossman. That was their assertion, as I recall, that it was sort of an arrogance that even having the information they did, they couldn't imagine that so few troops, which were not being resupplied or not being reinforced, I should say, could really be holding them off.
And well, as it turns out, that was partially the case. And with the other partially the case, which I can attempt to elucidate, which is what is causing some debate and discord. And I don't, I'll just try to explain it as I understand Grossman to be explaining it, not that I necessarily think it is the true explanation. I think a lot of times in war, we don't really know what is the cause, what is the effect, and I think that's a struggle when you're trying to you know, you try to read something to understand it better, and you are only left maybe with more questions. And that's okay. I don't know. It happens. So Disco Barbello said, "I found the line a little cryptic."
Oh, I should we should
One.
probably say that the line itself is freedom was the apparent aim of the war, but the sly fingers of history changed this. Freedom simply became a way of waging the war, a means to an end, which is what Barbello is referring to.
You had that line just like right on hand?
What?
You had that line right on hand?
Well,
I didn't
I was
even.
it it's in my notes.
Dude, this guy, he's coming prepared.
You not recorded your notes in front of you? You're
No,
raw the
I
whole
have
thing.
just random highlights.
I'm so impressed.
Yeah. I'm just kind of just all right. Well, hey, look at this guy.
That's why he's finishing up his
Yeah,
PhD.
right. Yeah, just all right, yeah, sure. Just thoughts for 300 pages is my dissertation. No, I looked back at whatever the line was, but I just didn't have it handy. And I realized I totally missed another comment, but I'll link it back together. Watch this real swift move. So Disco Barbello is talking about this line that Cameron so nicely just quoted, wondering what Grossman means by the sly fingers of history have changed this. My first guess is maybe he's referencing history in the scientific socialism sense, something which the party directs, but is also inevitable. And this other very pressing quote or pressing thoughts, I wonder if Grossman might have felt particularly bitter or let down by this issue of freedom. I can't imagine enduring a war like that only to find yet more autocracy on the other side of it. Once the exhilaration of victory wears off, it must have been devastating to contemplate. And then they say, I mean, I feel bad about it and couldn't be more remote from it. And Dominique is also kind of pondering the same question in Discord on is the word freedom being used ironically, or you know, the Soviet project is cast as the fighters against fascism, but at this point it's pretty clear that the Soviets have their own form of autocracy bearing down on them, so maybe they aren't fighting for their own freedom because they sort of don't have any. And they say, my poor brain is trying its best to keep up with Grossman to various degrees of success, chapter to chapter, which is completely fair. And the issue of freedom, I think, is an interesting one for the Grossman, mostly because I do think, even in retrospect, he does see something that is redeemable, maybe worth saving, or could have gone differently. Maybe you could jump in and say on the Soviet system, and that there is some kernel or some essence of freedom that exists within the system that they were initially going for, and that is what people are buying into, I think. I don't think that people are buying into large scale totalitarian systems. I think when we get to that level, you see this ideological influence that is operating on both sides, on the Nazi side and the Soviet side. There are some similar causes and effects there. But I think that what Grossman is most interested in is this sense of freedom that emerges on the front with these regiments that are just these a handful of people that are they're fighting off the Nazis. They're not filling out paperwork. They're not writing reports. And the Soviets say, hey, you know, go for it. What do we care? Have fun. And there's a very sad line at the end saying that, you know, right, but the sly fingers of history changed this. Freedom became simply a way of waging war, a means to an end. And I think this gets wrapped up in the broader discussion that Grossman is dealing with as he's writing the book that has to do with what happens afterwards. And a lot of these people are sort of, you know, they're wrapped up into this collective sacrifice. A lot of them, you know, written out of official history. And I would say that, as he puts it, the freedom is, it's a means to an end. It's not something that's going to be foundational for the Soviet Union in the later 40s and 50s. I don't think that would be a time that most people would describe as free. And so, as Dominique says, ah, so as bleak as I thought, terrific. And that is what I would say is kind of the conclusion of a lot of this book, which is trying to really wrestle with the fact that you do have a system which has aspects that you really might say are better. Yet it does things that are in many ways, I don't want to say, you know, just as bad to make light of anything that the Nazis did, but the Soviet system does many things which are terrible. And so Grossman is really, I think, trying to engage with that and trying to explore that. And I don't think he figures it out throughout the book, which is something that I think I've been saying since we started and is going to frustrate everyone when we get 400 pages further. But just be prepared that it's not going to wrap up nice and clean.
Right.
You're going to think, yeah, wow, I read 900 pages and I still feel bad. Well, yeah, you will.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's the gross man for you.
Yeah, that's the gross man.
Yeah, I think that's a great explanation. I also wanted to say, when I read that line, I can kind of talk about it, not from a, I think you did a great job of breaking down an actual, like, logical point to point explanation, but I think you'd also understand it kind of in terms of vibes. And one of the ways I'll explain, or the example I'll choose to explain that is the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee. So during the war, the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee were a number of journalists who were doing work specifically around, like, Jewish journalists, a lot of them especially focusing on work on war crimes against the Jewish peoples of the USSR. One of their projects was one that Grossman worked on along with Ilya Ehrenberg, the Black Book, what was known as the Black Book, which was a documentation of Nazi war crimes against Jewish peoples. And throughout the war, it received a lot of support, both from the Soviet government and also from allied, or, you know, from the Western allies, let's say. And some of that work ends up being used in the Nuremberg trials, right? And abroad, this is published. This is really important work that they're doing, and it ends up being really, it does end up being used. However, the Black Book is only ever published in Yiddish in the USSR, and then after the war, it's suppressed. So there's these years where Grossman and his work is sort of valorized that this is so important. Like, he's doing this stuff that is, you know, the attitude I think he takes in the Stalingrad of how important the work that is he's doing that's being supported by the USSR at that time. And then after the war, don't divide the dead. And in fact, more than don't divide the dead, most of the leadership on the Jewish Anti-Fascist Committee end up being arrested and shot in the basement of the Lubyanka. So, like, the vibe is the way that this particular committee, and this is just indicative, one example among many, that they were given freedom that was useful to the Allies and was used in legal contexts, that after its use is no longer needed, it is, you know, left on the floor of the Lubyanka.
It was very interesting. And although I think Stalin had his own plan to deal with the Nazis, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Post World War II, and it did not involve legal mechanisms.
No, it did not.
to say the least.
Yeah. That was a typically Stalinist response to things.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But it was an interesting discussion that we've been having on these few chapters. I'm glad that it has caused some discussion.
Yeah, me as well. I'm glad to see it. I'm super excited to, I've got like a long drive to get home after this, but I am super excited to sit down and respond to people once I get there.
Yes, Cameron's habit of, I do love that, Cameron, you have the habit of not being able to not respond to someone in Discord. And not only that, but your response always has to be that you will try whatever somebody has put in the chat, which wasn't a challenge or invitation, but you will do it.
It's there. I won't say it, but there is a list of things that I promised people in the chat that still working on. Through a couple. I've got a couple podcasts which I finished up. I just need to mention the chat. One more I need to do, some reading to do. Anyway.
It makes you an infinitely better friend than me, and I really respect you for it.
Well, it's a balance because you do things in a timely fashion. That's our balance. You do things in a timely fashion, it gets done. If you ask me to do something, it will get done, but it will take about four more weeks than you're hoping for.
True. Anywho, onwards and upwards for the gross man. Chapter 33 discussion coming to you tomorrow, which means that you will be hearing from us again soon.